Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
On this week's edition of Latin Waves, we speak to Graham Russell from Rights Action about life in Honduras post-military coup, how the coup has created an uprising of an extraordinary people's movement, and how their continued peaceful struggle against impunity has made life difficult for the coupist government. On the second part of our show, we speak to singer-songwriter David Rovics about his music, society, and his philosophy of change. So stay tuned.
My guest is Graham Russell. He is the coordinator for Rights Action. We reached him in Connecticut. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
June 28th, 2009 is a day that few people will forget in Latin America. Struggle by the population to have their voices heard, were their voices ignored. Tell us, what happens now? Where do we go from here? Perhaps we could begin with a little summary of the events up till the elections.
It's been a very big struggle, as you mentioned. Their voices have been heard, and it's slightly a good news story with this struggle in Honduras, though it's very difficult. After the June 28th coup against President Zelaya's government that ousted the elected government of President Zelaya in Honduras, the military, in collusion with the oligarchy, basically took over all the different branches of the government. This coup would not have been possible without the direct collaboration between the hierarchy of the military and then the oligarchic sectors that dominate Honduras. And then all through July, August, September, October, November, this extraordinary people's movement came together in Honduras, comprised of women's groups, indigenous groups, gay and lesbian groups, campesino organizations, and then certain sectors, the teachers' union played a very huge role in this struggle. There was a break-off sector from one of the dominant political parties, the Liberal Party. It was a very fascinating coming together of many different sectors of Honduran society. And they were able to sort of struggle with the coup regime and hold it to a standstill. What I mean by that is that the coup regime hoped that within 2 or 3 weeks of the coup on June 28th, that they would have dealt with any protests by then, and then had their new government accepted by the rest of Latin America and the world. And that never happened. And so it remained a very isolated regime all through late 2009. And at the same time, the people's movement, which was a peaceful movement, just kept on protesting, kept on carrying out a wide range of sort of protest activities. But it was at great cost. At least 30 people were assassinated by the coup regime during these 5 months of struggle. Hundreds were illegally detained and stuck in detention centers and tortured, and women were raped while in detention. Thousands received death threats and had, and then many more were wounded in protests by police and military opening fire. So it's been an incredibly costly struggle, but the amazing Honduran people movement stuck with it. Then on November 29th, there were these so-called elections. These were the elections that were going to happen anyway if the coup had not happened. And so the coup regime itself was hoping that the elections would be a way of sort of legitimizing all that they had done, all the crimes they had committed, the illegal coup itself. But these elections were boycotted from the people's movement in Honduras, so there was an extremely low turnout to the elections. Somewhere just over 30% of the voters turned out. And secondly, it was only a few of the more conservative governments in the Americas that accepted the so-called validity of these elections. And, you know, shamelessly, that included the government of Canada accepted the legitimacy of the elections, the United States, and a couple of other governments. But for the most part, most governments have not accepted the legitimacy of the elections. So as it stands now, the coup regime is still in power in Honduras. The elected president, President Zelaya, is in the Brazilian embassy in downtown Tegucigalpa, still recognized by most Hondurans as the elected president. And on January 27th, in a couple of weeks, there will be the so-called formal transfer of power. But, of course, the whole thing's a bit of a charade, or it's quite absurd, because the outgoing president, President Zelaya, has been was ousted by a military coup and is holed up in the Brazilian embassy, surrounded by military. And the temporary caretaker de facto regime of Roberto Micheletti is not recognized by anyone. So no one's quite sure how January 27th is going to play itself out in fact, because it's an illegal government handing over power to the incoming government that has won power through the carrying out of fraudulent elections. So it's an incredibly complex story.
It's easy to be discouraged when you organize and struggle to reach something and you don't get exactly what you want. The people of Honduras had organized to try to prevent the elections from happening. But as you point out, this should not be considered a point of defeat, but rather a story to celebrate. Because in spite of the might of the military government and the incredible economic and political and access to the media, the population were able to not only prevent a military coup government from acquiring legitimacy in the eyes of their population, but also in the international level. The question is, what do we do now? What is our role to preserve the lives of Hondurans who valiantly struggle to establish a democratic society?
Well, I think there's a couple things. All through last fall, from June, July forward, right through to the end of December, the struggle had sort of a short-term focus. They were trying to prevent the holding of the elections. They were trying to pressure for the stepping down of the de facto regime and the return of Zelaya. They were not able to achieve this. And the main reason they couldn't achieve this, in my opinion, is that the United States, backed by Canada and governments like Panama and Costa Rica, but mainly the United States, directly and then indirectly supported the coup regime. And the United States, unfortunately and sort of unjustly, remains the power broker in the Americas. And that's this is a historical problem. But because the United States indirectly backed the coup regime, the popular movement was not able to achieve the stepping down of the coup regime. So now that things shift to a medium and a long-term struggle, everyone has showed their cards. I mean, Canada and the United States are supporting the incoming government coming to power through these illegitimate elections, and that's not right. That's completely wrong, and that's how it's playing itself out. So the people's movement in Honduras shifts to a medium and long-term strategy. And by that I mean they're no longer simply demanding the return of President Zelaya, because his period's about to end. And so even though it was illegally ruptured, his presidential period is ending on January 27th. All along, the people's movement in Honduras has said that their short-term goal is the return of President Zelaya, but their medium and long-term goal is the significant transformation of the country. And so they will shift to a medium and long-term strategy, building their popular and political base from below, and they will not recognize the legitimacy of the incoming government. With respect to Canada, remains the responsibility of the Canadian citizens to, A, keep on pressuring our government, and in a very critical way, because it has legitimized and accepted a coup. And this is something that is unacceptable, should be unacceptable anywhere in the world, let alone in the Americas. And secondly, we need to focus a lot of attention in Canada on what are Canadian economic interests in Honduras, and why was it that our government has accepted an illegal coup regime in Honduras, And I think it's valid to point attention to Canada's mining interests in Honduras, to Canada's Maquiladora sweatshop interests in Honduras, as significant factors as to why our government has illegally supporting this the coup and now the incoming government.
Mining has deeply impacted Latin America. One of the stories we ran on our show was about the anti-mining activists that were murdered in December in El Salvador. Four anti-mining activists were murdered in December alone. And the repression against people who dare speak against this industry has been noted throughout Latin America. I wonder if you could talk about the relationship of this industry in Honduras and their economic interests in relation to the military coup.
There's three main Canadian companies in Honduras: Yanama, Breakwater, and Goldcorp. The biggest company that's been operating in Honduras is Goldcorp. All those companies took a low profile with respect to the regime and the military coup, i.e. none of them came out and said, yes, this is the right thing. They all just kept a low profile. And, but it's highly suspected that indirectly they were in favor of the coup itself. The National Mining Association of Honduras is directly linked with the oligarchic sectors that planned and carried out the coup. And those three mining companies are all members of the National Mining Association of Honduras. What is known is that President Zelaya's government, the one that was ousted by the military coup, had implemented a moratorium on giving out further mining concessions until there was a complete overhaul of mining laws that govern mining in Honduras. The mining laws in Honduras have long been extremely favorable to mining companies, including companies like Goldcorp and other Canadian companies. And so President Zelaya was sort of raising a flag to say, listen, we're going to be changing how you can do business here in our country. And so he put a moratorium on mining. What is suspected now is that the incoming government of Pepe Lobos, of President Lobos, who won these fraudulent elections in November, that they will probably try and open the country up again for sort of mining with few, if any, regulations. And so that has to remain a very serious focus of interest of Canadians, because most of the mining companies in Honduras are Canadian. And then, as you mentioned, it's not just a Canadian mining company Honduran issue. There's been very serious problems with Canadian mining companies in a number of countries across Latin America. And you mentioned the case of El Salvador, where in late December there was four people killed in the region of Cabañas. And this is a mining struggle related to another Canadian mining company called Pacific Rim. This is just across the border from Honduras. And then last fall in Guatemala, just across the border again, where these three countries meet, the Canadian nickel mining company, Hudbay Minerals, there was a community leader, Adolfo Ish, who was murdered by security guards that are in the hire of Hudbay Minerals. So there's a systemic problem going on in Latin America, in a number of countries, with Canadian mining companies contributing to serious cases of repression.
For many of us in North America, it's easy to justify what happens in Latin America by simply explaining it, that this country simply have corrupt governments that make policies and decisions that make their workers vulnerable. But few people realize the incredible mobilization throughout Latin America to change the way policies are made. And one vehicle has been to institute national constitutional assemblies. And to have a new constitution that reflects the rights of the citizens of the country is an integral step for Latin Americans to reclaim their sovereignty and their rights to the decision table. In Honduras, the people of Honduras have been advocating for a national assembly as part of the demands, in addition to returning President Zelaya to power. Where does this process stand now? We are seeing a transfer, a legitimate transfer of power to Pepe Lobos on January 27th. What is the future of that movement? What is the future of the people's mobilization in Honduras to establish a new constitution that is reflective of their rights and their needs in the country?
Well, that remains the National Constituent Assembly remains the number one demand of the Honduran popular movement. And that demand, that becomes their key demand in the medium and longer term struggle that they're now settling into. It had been in early 2009, late 2008, it had become an immediate demand of theirs, and President Zelaya supported the call to move towards the establishment of a National Constituent Assembly, similar to ones that have been held recently in Bolivia and Ecuador. And then that was one of the reasons that the oligarchy and the military in Honduras carried out the coup, is they wanted to block the movement towards the establishment of a National Constituent Assembly. So two things happened. In the short term, the oligarchy and the military were successful. They ousted the democratically elected government of President Zelaya, and they blocked any movement towards a National Constituent Assembly. But at the same time, they took the mask off the facade of democracy and rule of law in Honduras. And so the Honduran regime sort of exposed itself, certainly to the Americas, let alone the world, as being this undemocratic, corrupt, oligarchic-dominated government. And as we discussed earlier, the Honduran popular movement came together in a very organic and widespread way. And so while their short-term interests have been dealt a severe setback, and there was all the repression against them at great cost, you know, loss of life, etc., the medium and long term, it's sort of strengthened in some ways the Honduran popular movement and their resolve to keep this demand on the table. How that'll play itself out over the medium and longer term, you know, remains to be seen. If the United States and Canada are allowed to unabashedly support the repressive government of Honduras, and if they can keep using massive levels of repression against the Honduran people, then repression and injustice can continue in Honduras. But if we do our job in the international community and we hold our governments accountable for their actions supporting the repressive government of Honduras, and if we succeed in forcing, you know, for example, the Canadian government to stop being such a blind supporter of this repressive government, that in turn empowers the Honduran popular movement to continue with its efforts to refound their country. This is the expression they're using. By establishing the National Constituent Assembly, they're saying we need to refound our society and country.
Rights Action has been sending delegations of observers to Honduras. Tell us about the next delegation and how can people participate?
We have an educational human rights delegation going to Honduras at the end of this month. People arrive in Honduras on January 24th and will be there for 1 week. And other groups, there's a Quixote Center delegation in the United States that's sending people down, and Voz de los de Abajo, the voices of the people from below out of the Chicago area that's sending people down. Perhaps there'll be some other Canadian groups like Common Frontiers has sent people down. The BC Federation of Teachers has sent people down. So hopefully different organizations will continue to send people on these educational fact-finding trips that are also human rights accompaniment trips at the same time. They're very important. They're costly. You know, people have to pay for their round-trip airfare, and then in-country costs are not that high. But it's very important to show this North-South solidarity. And so Rights Action, that is one aspect of our work, and we will continue with that. Another aspect of our work is getting funds into the hands of the Honduran people. So Rights Action regularly is channeling funds to Honduran organizations who are working in favor of democracy, working in favor of the rule of law, working in favor of, in defense of human rights.
For people who would like to contribute, those who may not be able to participate in the delegations but would like to help fund this work, how can they get involved?
So the best way is to get on our listserv. So people can go to our website, rightsaction.org, www.rightsaction.org. There's tons of information on the website that people can read through, and then you can join our listserv. And joining our listserv is the best way to start to read more about these issues, and then also you will people on the listserv receive notices of our delegations or going to Honduras, or notices of speakers from Honduras that we might be bringing to Canada on speaking tours, etc.
My guest is Graham Russell. He is the coordinator for Rights Action. To learn more about this organization, go to rightsactions.org. Graham, why should people care? I know that it seems an odd question to ask, but why should it matter to us here in Canada that the people in Honduras are able to create a democratic society for themselves?
Well, perhaps there's two levels of answer. One is just, why should anyone care about any injustice or inequality anywhere? I mean, each person that gets involved in these issues, they make their own personal choice in life as to what's important to them and what they want to, you know, spend their life contributing to. And whether it's being concerned about the well-being and, you know, justice and equality in Honduras or justice and equality in Canada or somewhere else around the planet, there's each person's personal choice as to what kind of world do we want to live in. The second level is that this is not just a Honduran problem. This is also a Canadian problem, what's going on in Honduras. It's an American problem, what's going on in Honduras. Our governments have extensive economic interests in Honduras. The United States has extensive military interests in Honduras. And both of our countries, particularly the United States, have long histories of economic interventionism and military interventionism in Honduras. And fundamentally, that makes it our problem. So the Honduran people themselves are sort of at the forefront of defending their human rights, defending their democracy and rule of law. But they can't do it alone because the oligarchic and military sectors are receiving their power and their sort of justification or endorsement, not just from inside the country. They're receiving it from their economic and military relations from Canada and the United States, for example. And so it makes it our problem as well.
Thank you so much for being with us. Graham Russell is a lawyer. He is the coordinator for Rights Actions. For more information, go to rightsactions.org. Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. Bye now.
Take care. Bye.
You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.